This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thanks for being with us today.
Mr. Secretary General, Mr. President, world leaders, and distinguished delegates, welcome to New York. It is a profound honor to stand here in my home city as a representative of the American people to address the people of the world.
That was President Donald Trump speaking at the United Nations General Assembly today, his first time as president. And the America First agenda that the president promised was delivered on Tuesday. The president emphasized sovereignty as a key to world order, stressing that nations should prioritize their own interests, even while criticizing governments like Venezuela and Cuba for how they handle their own affairs.
As president of the United States, I will always put America first. Just like you, as the leaders of your countries, will always and should always put your countries first.
North Korea and Iran were singled out with harsh rhetoric. The president praised sanctions against North Korea, but then he issued a threat from one of the loudest microphones in world diplomacy.
The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
President Trump went on to refer to Iran as a murderous regime and an economically depleted rogue state. And he also kept speculation going on whether the United States would stick with the UN-backed Iran nuclear deal.
Frankly, that deal is an embarrassment to the United States, and I don't think you've heard the last of it. Believe me.
Let's get some analysis on the speech now and on the evolving U.S. role in the United Nations. Uri Friedman is staff writer at The Atlantic. He covers global and U.S. foreign policy. Uri, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you, Todd.
It's great to have you, too. I heard a lot of talk from the president, the word sovereignty, I don't know how many times in that speech, but really pushing the idea of the independent sovereignty of nations over and over. I did not hear in that speech the traditional defense of American democratic ideals and America as the light of democracy around the world. I didn't hear that.
No, that was remarkably absent relative to the addresses of past presidents. He did invoke democracy in certain respects. So he criticized the government of Venezuela for being an authoritarian government. He said the Iranian government oppresses its people. But there was really an absence of that relative to, if you compare it to, for example, a Barack Obama speech or even a John F. Kennedy speech. I think what Trump was trying to do here is he's an America First president, and he's a continued member of an organization that puts the world first. So how do you reconcile that? And I think his solution in the speech was a concept of sovereignty. The argument was basically countries are independent, they act in their own self-interest, and that is the way that the United Nations was founded. But sometimes those self-interests overlap, and when there are common interests, that is when the United Nations is strongest. So it's almost like a bottom-up vision of the United Nations as opposed to a top-down one. That's very different. For example, John F. Kennedy in 1963 said absolute sovereignty is impossible because it doesn't guarantee absolute security. In an age when we have nuclear weapons and other collective international challenges, we have to have some top-down governance like the United Nations. So this was a departure.
Principled realism is a doctrine that the president talked about here, which is of a piece of what you're talking about, Uri Friedman. But principled realism also excludes the term idealism, which is a theme that many U.S. presidents in fora like this have used before.
Yeah, I think what he was trying to argue there is that the United States has certain principles, like, for example, sovereignty, like, for example, countries being able to determine their own destinies. But when I think Donald Trump talks about realism, what he's saying is he doesn't want to dictate to other countries the way they should live, the systems of governments they should have. He doesn't want to remake other countries in America's image, which is a reference to kind of George W. Bush's mission in Iraq, and that he really just thinks, countries are essentially transactional. They want what is good for their country. And we have to recognize that and craft foreign policy, you know, in light of that. Now, in some people might say that is a very different vision than the United States has had in the past, or at least articulated in the past. Other people are saying, well, you know, the United States has often invoked these lofty ideals but not practiced what it preached and actually engaged in a lot of transactional behavior. So some people would say Donald Trump is just articulating what the U.S. leaders have actually done in practice rather than what they've said in their rhetoric.
So there may be an interpretation here, as you're saying, that Trump is just being a lot more honest about American actions and intentions around the world. Uri Friedman, try to bring us inside the minds of some of the delegates and the world leaders around that room there. And I realize that there are 192 nations, if that's the right number. Every country has different priorities. But Ambassador Nick Burns was on this show just a day or two ago, describing, especially in Europe and in a lot of countries around the world, there's a perception that Donald Trump has abdicated leadership of the West, of the Democratic West. Doesn't necessarily mean the United States has, because he won't be president forever, but that there's lost time here. Do you agree with that assessment? Do other countries around the Great Hall there at the UN think that?
I think some countries do. I think a lot of, for example, if you look at a lot of European countries, Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, is in attendance. I think they would argue that they see that abdication of responsibility in regard to, for example, climate change. Climate change is an international problem. It affects all countries. And you need a country or a group of countries to lead that kind of effort. That is not something that any one country can do alone. And I think a lot of European leaders feel that the U.S. has abdicated responsibility in regard to leading on climate change. Now, others are picking up the ball, right? So Germany is, France is, China to a certain extent is. But they would say the United States is not doing that. I think another place where that would be the case is on free trade. You know, Donald Trump withdrew from the TPP, an Asia-Pacific trade deal. And I think there is thought that other countries need to kind of pick up the slack there. I don't think that you can just say in a sweeping statement that the United States has totally abdicated its international responsibility. I think on the concept of terrorism, for example, the United States is doing what it did under Obama and what it did under George W. Bush. It's really leading that effort. It's trying to get Middle Eastern countries like Saudi Arabia to do more to root out the ideology. It's done a lot of progress in actually reducing the territory that ISIS controls in Syria and Iraq. So I think it really depends. It's kind of issue by issue. I think where you're seeing it biggest is climate change, free trade, and really the promotion of democracy and human rights. That's where I feel like there is a void, and other countries are nervous that if the United States doesn't fill it, are other countries up to the challenge, and can they do it collectively because they don't have the power that the United States has?
Well, let's talk about some of the specific cases in some of the specific countries that the president mentioned in his speech and went after some of America's rivals with some pretty stark rhetoric. I will say, just to start, only veiled references to Russia or China in that speech. The president at one point said that America would stand against violations of sovereignty in Ukraine, which seems like a veiled, certainly is a veiled swipe at Russia, and in the South China Sea, a veiled swipe at China. But in the case of North Korea, where the confrontation is growing increasingly hot, Uri Friedman, the president called the government of North Korea a band of criminals, talked about their nuclear testing, talked about their testing of missiles, called Kim Jong-un his famous Twitter insult, now Rocket Man, which was an interesting choice for the diplomatic sort of culture of the UN. But then I'll also repeat this line, which was fairly stark, warning that if North Korea lashes out in any way, and I'm quoting here, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. That had to take delegates aback in the hall.
That was by far the most remarkable passage of the speech. I'd recommend listeners read and reread that portion of the transcript of the speech, because that was, I mean, extremely belligerent, bellicose language. Yeah. You know, he was vague. It's worth pointing out, he was vague on what would cause the United States to totally destroy North Korea, right? He said, you know, if they don't stop their destructive behavior. But this gets at the vague things that the president and his advisors have said in the past about, you know, so what are we talking about here? Is it North Korean threats? Is it firing missiles toward Guam? Is it actually demonstrating the capability to hit the United States with a nuclear weapon? Is it the sign of an imminent nuclear attack? So we really don't know what would trigger that kind of overwhelming response. And potentially that's deliberate. They want to be vague so that North Korea says, oh, we don't want to do anything provocative. But there was no, I would say there was no articulation of new policy here. We didn't say, you know, some kind of red line drawn on what specific behavior North Korea can't take. But what we did see is almost Trump being Trump here, calling him Rocket Man, using the most threatening language possible, which he is an advocate of, because he says that, you know, North Korea only understands one thing, which is threats and the potential use of force. And what we also saw is a kind of laying of the groundwork for if the United States does decide in the unlikely possibility to take military action against North Korea, this is kind of a basis for that. We saw this a little bit in 2002 before the Iraq War. George W. Bush came out in front of the same UN General Assembly and gave a long, long litany of reasons why there might have to be action with or without the United Nations against Iraq. So we saw something similar in a little bit of a more limited form, a less specific form, here with North Korea, him laying out the reasons why it is a threat, as he put it, to the entire world.
Well, Uri Friedman, we have just about 2 minutes left with you, and I want to make sure we talk about the case of Iran as well. The president criticized the Maduro regime in Venezuela, criticized the government in Cuba, which is pretty standard American Republican fare. On Iran, it was remarkable as well. The president called Iran a murderous regime and criticized the Iran nuclear deal, called it an embarrassment to the United States. He hasn't pulled out of that deal yet, but he also said, I don't think you've heard the last of it. The president is fond of these kinds of sort of warnings about policy. But if you watch the cutaway shot, Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel, nods as the president starkly criticizes Iran.
Yeah, Todd, I got to say, I'm going to keep looking at that line. I don't think you've heard the last of it again and again, puzzling over what that means, because that is a very vague line that could mean a lot of different things. So what has happened is October 15th, Trump faces a deadline about whether he wants to recertify this Iran deal. And he did not give a very specific indication here of whether he's going to recertify or not. But what he did say is that Iran is engaging in all types of provocative behavior. Netanyahu agrees with that and wants stricter rules around this agreement. The biggest concern for them is that this agreement ends. It has a deadline in 10 and 15 years. And so what I could see happening is either a decertification of the deal on October 15th or the Trump administration continuing with the deal but trying to mobilize support internationally for ways to mitigate against the fact that this ends in 10 or 15 years and trying to extend these deadlines. So that was kind of the suggestion he had, but he did not make that specific. We did not get any new clarity about whether he will certify the deal or not certify it in mid-October.
So just before we let you go in the last couple of seconds, Uri Friedman, we saw a lot of strong rhetoric. You saw Trump being Trump and not a lot of, if I'll call it, new diplomatic real news here. The United States taking a new direction that we didn't already have an idea about.
No, I don't think that. I mean, he was using a teleprompter. He didn't really go off script a lot. So it was him being using a lot of his rhetoric, but it wasn't new policy. The biggest thing I think is this is what you saw. This was the fullest articulation we've seen so far of how Trump squares America first, his nationalist agenda, with the fact that America is a global leader in the world and one of the most powerful countries in the world. If you want to look at an articulation of that, it's here.
Uri Friedman is staff writer at The Atlantic. He covers global affairs and U.S. foreign policy.